This episode of The Girlfriend Bracket is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. With free shipping on orders of $100 or more, a 25% buy list bonus, and their ever-popular customer rewards program, CoolStuffInc is the store for all of your Magic the Gathering needs.
Hey. They call me Hal. They call me Stacy. They call me Her. They call me Jane.
Everyone, this is episode number 42 of The Girlfriend Bracket. My name is Erin.
I'm Hallie.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Chris.
And we have a pox on our house. It started with Hallie and Katie. I think you guys were the first ones sick on that one episode.
Yes.
You were sick at the same time, and then Chris got it. And now I have it. So thank you, whoever cursed us. And Amy, if you're not careful, you will be sick next.
You know, I woke up with it.
I don't think that's what Beyonce had in mind when she said, I woke up like this.
No, I'm pretty sure. But everybody has the same number of hours in the day as Beyonce. Just remember that.
That's true. So if you're listening, that voice that we have with us is our friend Amy Bailey. Say hello.
Hi, everybody.
Hey, so for those who don't know who you are, why don't you tell our listeners who you are and what you do?
So my name is Amy Bailey, and I live here in Oakland, California. I am the host of The Planeswalker Guide, which is a podcast that is geared for sort of the one-year, maybe broaching one-year play, and I just played my first GP, and I'm very excited to talk about that today.
Awesome.
Sweet. Well, we'll definitely talk about that later, but I want to get to know you a little bit more for those who don't know. So when did you actually start playing Magic?
My first pre-release was Origins. So I'm very new. I started playing in late April of 2015 and really just kind of fell down the rabbit hole pretty strongly. I've been gaming off and on my whole life, mostly board games, grew up doing that, dorked around with a bunch of stuff through my 20s and 30s, and then I was introduced to Magic by an ex-boyfriend, and it was just a really, it just sucked me in a huge way and really pinged a lot of things for me in terms of card interaction, how it really works, and it was a struggle. And so getting through that struggle, I'm very goal-oriented, and getting through that struggle and feeling comfortable playing was a big goal for me. And then after that, taking the podcast on solo, the stories in the community really started to really get to me pretty strongly. And I've really been enjoying exploring kind of the backstories with players. I've talked to people all around the world and all around the country and covered a lot of different topics that aren't necessarily deck tech. It might be, how does the steps of a turn work? And what's it like to be a judge? And what's it like to live in Australia? And have cards that are super expensive? And is gaming there different? Is your metagame oddly different than America? And I set a goal for this year to go to GP London. So I'm kind of excited to see, I'm very excited to see Magic play in another country this year.
Mm. And you're also involved with your Lady Planeswalkers branch in your area, correct?
That's true. Another young woman and I, Jenny Hee, started the Bay Area Lady Planeswalkers Society. And it was really surprising to me that at this date, in late 2015, that there wasn't already a Bay Area Lady Planeswalkers. And you could argue that the community around here, we live in a bubble, that everything is very diverse, and it's not unusual to see, families with adopted kids and interracial families and trans families and all these things coming to play at the shop. And that is true, but it doesn't change the fact that creating a safe and welcoming place to learn how to play Magic is important. And so we're really focused on inserting a lot of fun and giving the women and families that do come to play. We've got about 68 members at this point. We have, I would say, about 20 regular attendees, and it grows and shrinks based on the closeness to a pre-release, right? And we try to do things like mini masters, and we have a commander night, and really bring a lot of kids into play and see a wider range of players than most, like than FNM might see.
Okay. And what has your experience personally been like as a woman playing Magic?
I would say it's been overwhelmingly positive, but I think I'm very lucky in where I live. And I've had my moments where, you know, I've had to stand up for myself, and it absolutely happened at the GP, which was, I thought, I was a little surprised, and I don't know why. But overwhelmingly in this particular area, all three of the game shops that are local to me, it's got a very raucous and sort of, we just really love gaming and we want to get as many people in gaming as we possibly can. It has been interesting doing it solo because I'm older, I'm 40. And so when I sit down at a table to play you, and you're a young man, it might be like, oh, she's an easy mark and I'm going to take her down really fast. And they can't. And I think that they're a little surprised that then they have to fight. And that's been really the funnest part of the whole thing. Yeah.
So. Well, we're definitely glad to have you on today.
Oh, thanks. I'm thrilled and flattered to be here.
Woman of Excellence this week is a woman named Pat Kurtz from the Washington area. We received this nomination through Facebook, and the young man said that Pat Kurtz was very friendly and welcoming when I first moved out to the Tacoma area in April of 2012. She was the judge for a local game store that I went to while trying to find a new community. As the head judge for this particular store, she ran a tight ship and did not tolerate jerks. She always seemed to emphasize the teaching aspect of the game, and now my two sons have adopted the same attitude when teaching their friends how to play Magic. The original store where I met Pat has now closed, but I still go to F&M and bigger events where I know that she will be judging because I know she will bring a certain level of integrity wherever she goes. So that's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great.
Keep up the good work, Pat. We launched our Patreon on the 1st of January, and it blew up. We are very close to making our second goal, so thank you all so much for that. And as part of that, our first goal, our first reward for people who sponsored us was that we were going to give shout-outs on the show. So I would like to give personal thank yous to Andre, Aaron, Courtney, William, Patrick, Michael, Kelly, Tim, Joshua, Nathan, Amy, that's you, right?
Yes, it is.
Andrew, Eric, Tonda, Addison, Brandon, Matt, Anthony, Stephen, and Anne-Marie, thank you so much for donating within the first 2 weeks of our Patreon.
Yeah, that's awesome. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so if you do want to support the show, you can find us at patreon.com/thegirlfriendbracket. You can also search for us as well. And once I start feeling better, I will start ordering our new microphones and we will get rolling. So GP Oakland was this past weekend, and we were all there. So Hallie and Katie, why don't you start us off? So I know that you two didn't do so hot in the main event, but you ended up killing the one side event you did play in. So why don't you tell us what happened?
We did, yeah. It was a ton of fun. So Katie and I decided to do Two-Headed Giant together. I really enjoy Two-Headed Giant and Team Sealed. And I thought that, you know, Katie and I would make a good team. So I asked her, and we ended up going 4-1, which was unfortunately not good enough to qualify for the pre-release event for Oath of the Gatewatch. But we had a great time, and we had some very interesting opponents.
Yes, we did. We had these one opponents that were just, like, arguing furiously at each other, like, throughout the whole round, and Hallie looks at me and she's like, I think we're going to win because they can't figure out what they're going to do. And we actually had to talk to a judge about some slow play because they were arguing so much that each turn was taking, like, a really long time. So the judge came over and was like, hey, I need you guys to make a play. And then they both got really frustrated and ended up scooping. I think they were just having a not very good day, regardless of the Two-Headed Giant. But and then there was another time when Aaron, I think, was standing watching us, and there was this little kid next to our opponents, and he was a very, very small child eating a very, very large sandwich. And he was just, like, standing so close to our opponent, I couldn't focus. I just kept watching him, and there was, like, lettuce falling out of his mouth. And Aaron caught me, like, glaring at him while I was like, ew, you're gross.
But, because Katie loves children.
Yes. No. Not at all.
I would have to say our last match was the highlight of the event, though, because our opponents learned the hard way that when you refuse to split, you usually lose.
Yep.
They did. We found out that the prizes for the event were very top-heavy, so we were 3-1 going in, and if we went 3-2, we would each get 20 prize tickets, And if we went 4-1, we would each get 360. So big, huge discrepancy. And, you know, Two-Headed Giant is a pretty high variance format because you only get to play one game. So we asked our opponents if they would be interested in splitting with us, because we would each get something like 190 prize tickets, which is, you know, no small potatoes. So we were just like, hey, guys, do you want to split with us? And they thought about it for a second. They were kind of hemming and hawing and looking at each other and saying, you know what? I think we could take them. I think our decks are pretty good. And I was thinking to myself, like, huh, it would be really funny if we won this game. And then we proceeded to win the game in a pretty dramatic fashion. The guy sitting across from me used the Conduit of Ruin, which is the 5/5 Eldrazi that lets you tutor up a colorless creature and reduces the cost of creatures that you play. And he used it to tutor up an Ulamog. And we spent several turns just sort of fighting him off. Like, I was beating down with allies, and Katie and I were kind of working together to fight off Ulamog. I used Quarantine Field to get rid of his Conduit of Ruin and his Hedron Archive, so he wouldn't have the mana to cast Ulamog. So Ulamog was just kind of stranded in his hand for several turns. And then when he was about to, on the turn when he would cast it, he has a Kozilek's Channeler, and Katie uses Adverse Conditions on his upkeep to tap it down, so now he still doesn't have enough mana to cast Ulamog. And then finally, before he gets his 10th land, so he can, you know, hard cast it, she plays a Void Winnower so that he can't even cast it if he wants to.
Yeah. It was like, we were at like, I think 32 or 33 when we won the game. And like, just multiple times throughout the game, they were like, we made the wrong decision. We should have just split. And Hallie and I were always like, It was a fun day. I think we worked really well as a team, and we both liked Two-Headed Giant a lot, but unfortunately our one loss, Hallie just couldn't draw any land, so we couldn't do a ton, but every other game I think our decks worked really well together, and we had a good time.
Yeah, for sure.
Cool. You two should find a third and try and do like a Team Seal GP.
We were talking about that, yeah.
I'm looking into flights for DC, so we'll see how it goes.
Awesome.
I would love to see you guys take that down. So, Chris, how did your GP go? Because you went better than I think even you expected on Saturday, and you played a really unique deck.
Yes. I'm really proud of how I ended up doing. I ended up going, I think, I was initially wrong about what I went, so I ended up going 4-4 instead of 5-4. And I was just happy to break even because I was worried I was going to go like, you know, like 0-4 drop or something like that and say forget it. But I really was confident in my deck. I was playing my blue-red Artificer Tremors deck that I brewed up, and it's super fun. Some of our listeners have asked me for the list, and so they know what I'm talking about. But basically, you know, make a bunch of Thopters, beat them down, sack stuff with Pian, Kirin, Nalar, and then I added collateral damage over the past weekend to try to spice it up a little bit. And I actually was able to hang. I mean, all of my games, I think, went to 3 at the GP, with the exception of playing Atarka Red. But I think that part of my Atarka Red issue was just that my opponent kind of played a little slow. I faced Red-Green Eldrazi, let's see, 3, maybe 4 times? It was just kind of interesting. And I was having a conversation with a friend today, and he was like, Red-Green Eldrazi was, like, getting toward the loser's bracket? I'm like, yeah, I guess. Maybe it's just having a tough time with Obzon and a bunch of other stuff. And then I also played the Blue-Green Eldrazi deck, so that was my first loss right out of the gate. And I hadn't really played versus that yet, so I was like, I don't even know what's going on here. So by the end of the day, I felt good about Red-Green Eldrazi, though, because I was like, okay, I know how to board against them. This isn't a problem. Plus, it's pretty sweet when you get to play Aligned Hedron Network, because it's pretty awesome. It's like, oh, your power, 5 or greater dudes, bye. See you later. Someone else played a Teemer Eldrazi build, which I thought was kind of interesting, but it didn't really take off. My opponent was super cool, and so we were able to exchange info to keep in contact, and seems like, I guess, they're somewhat notable in the Magic community. And then I had to play Obzon, and that was kind of tough. The, I believe it was third game, went really close, and I think we mulliganed collectively 7 times.
Ooh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. I was like, what is going on here? But I had a really good time at the GP. The main event, of course, was pretty cool. I played in the modern event on Friday, but I got caught up talking to people during, like, round 4, and I just never went back to my table, so, yeah, I was like, that's okay. I'm like, I'm not gonna worry about it. But most of my time was spent milling around talking to people, getting artist signatures, and just trying to take it all in and have a good time. The place across the street, I took a picture of it, was called Smart and Final. It was a grocery store, and it just cracked me up because it seemed like a place that Death and Taxes players would shop at, so I just thought it was kind of funny. But yeah, good time was had by all. I really appreciated being able to stay with Katie's mom, and the houseboat was really cool, and the weather was nice, and I just wish I could do it all over again.
How many playmats did you leave with?
Let's see. Hallie gave me the one from GP Paris. Let's see. I got 2 of the Ugin's Insight one. I got the Dissolve playmat, thanks to Brooke. And which one am I forgetting? There was another one. Oh, and then I bought one from Christopher Rush. So I left with a total of 5.
Okay, so this brings you to 80?
I think it's 75. Okay. So we're close. Wishful thinking. Okay.
We'll be there soon enough.
Yeah, that's the goal.
So I have a quick question about the playmats. Like, I have 5, and one of them is definitely, like, the fine china, right? I don't break it out for anything. Do you... How many of yours are absolutely out of bounds for playing with?
Let's see. I think I've used all of them at least once, if not more than that. There are some I'm a little more protective of, I will definitely say. I kind of sort of inadvertently damaged a little bit my GP Lil Playman, so every time I look at it, my eye kind of twitches a little bit. But that one, just because it's so rare. Now, would I lend them out? Probably not. Would I play with them at home or take them to F&M? Yeah. I don't know that any of them are particularly, like, hands-off type of situation, but there are ones that I would definitely be more protective of if someone was, like, hanging out with like an open soda on like the table and be like, you kind of need to back that up a little bit.
See, I have a playmat that I don't use only because the material is so weird. Someone gave me a Damnation playmat, but it's made of up of almost like carpet. Like, weird. It's not made of like normal playmat material. It has the backing of a playmat, like the, like if you flip your playmat over, that sticky rubber part, but the actual front of it is made out of like a thick material, and so your deck protectors, like, I like to snap my cards when I play them, so when I tap it, I tap and snap. Shout out to Serena Quinn on that one. But it's really hard to snap when your mat is made of like a carpet, so you have to like physically tap it, it doesn't slide, and that's really awkward. So that's the only mat that I don't use, just because it's really cumbersome.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Now, last weekend, Chris, you traveled to, or the weekend before last, you made a road trip to Cincinnati. And we took that week off because we were getting ready for this GP. So how was your Cincinnati trip?
It was awesome. The drive felt like nothing at all. But then again, I guess when you're on the road for more than 3 hours, time seems to lose meaning. But it was really awesome. I went down with my friend Ben. We got down there on Friday, and we stopped at my friend Donnie's store, which is Grinning Goblin Games in Batesville, Indiana. They had a super nice store, really nice crowd. We did an unsanctioned modern event that was really cool. And I got to kind of test my deck out a little more. Played a very interesting gentleman that had a Maze's End build that was pretty cool. And yes. I couldn't hate on him for it. It was wonderful. It was fogs everywhere. And it took me back in time to when I played Maze's End in Standard. I'm like, I love this. I love everything about it. Like, this is awesome. So we did that, and then Saturday was the main event. I got dropped 2 rounds before the end due to an issue that they had been having all day where people were sitting in the wrong seats. It was the largest open that they had ever had. The website was down, so all the pairings were on the pairings boards. So it took people a little bit to get to their seats, and we were kind of like jammed in like sardines. So people were kind of sitting in the wrong place all day. So a judge would come up to you later and be like, excuse me, you know, I think you're in the wrong seat. And they'd look and be like, oh, shit, yeah, I am. And it ended up happening to me later because someone else had sat in my spot. And thus, I sat in the wrong place and I got a game loss. So they dropped me from the tournament. I'm like, that's okay. I've almost played the whole thing, so no big. But I finally got to face Breach Reanimator while I was there. And that's really okay. I never need to play that deck ever again. It was just like, cool, I got to play my tower and my map, and then it was GG, so good times. I got taken out like swiftly by a mono green ramp deck that was running a Crater Hoof, so that was a little less than ideal, but it was really cool. I beat Burn, which I felt really good about. Yeah, there's nothing quite like Cassidy Lavog, blow up your Sacred Foundry and your Grivlobmancer. Good times. But it was a good event. I'm really glad that I went. I got to meet a lot of cool people and have a good time with some friends. Mrs. Mulligan was there, so I got to hang out with her. And I got to receive assistance from two judges. I would like to say a shout out to all the judges that were there that day because they were pulling people off the floor to help judge because they weren't expecting it to be so large. So thank you so much for that. I don't fault the judges in any way for all the chaos, but Ricky Hayashi and Lee Henderson helped me out a lot while I was there, so I was really happy about that. On Sunday, I did the Standard Challenge event. People must have forgotten that it wasn't single elim, so they kept dropping. It's like, no, you're guaranteed a prize. Where are you going? Because I wanted to get more practice for Oakland. I played Esper Dragons, I think, like twice, and I can't remember the rest of it, but it was a nice little event. And then we had dinner at a really awesome place called Terry's Turf Club, and it's a place you sit in. It's got a bunch of neon signs, like outside and inside, and very interesting burgers. So if anyone's ever down Cincinnati way, I would definitely recommend stopping there to eat. They're open pretty late. And it was just awesome just to see the landscape that was there. It was so much different than being in Wisconsin or even Illinois because there's actual mountains there. I was like, holy shit. Like, this is the thing. Like, we don't have this anywhere by us. And I would go down there again. I mean, it seems like there's a good collection of people down there that play Magic. And it'd be nice to just get away every once in a while and go down there and play. So I had a lot of fun.
Amy, we talked a little bit earlier on the show about how this was really your first GP.
Mm-hmm.
And so what was your experience like in Oakland?
It was awesome. And you know, it's my hometown. And so that was, it made it very easy for me to be there. But I did 2-4 drop. And I went into this whole thing 6 months ago when I started playing. There's an episode of my podcast where I'm like, no way. Never ever going to play in a GP. That's just not a thing. And about 3 months ago, I started to, that urge to compete started to rise up in me. And I just kind of couldn't deny it after a while. And when the list of GPs came out, there was just no way I wasn't going to do it. So I built myself a black white token, not really control 30 kill spells and a secure the waste deck.
I'm familiar. Yeah.
And I had a lot of fun. I cracked the top 1500. You know, 499 other people can't say that. You know? And I was really proud of myself getting to 2-4 drop. I was absolutely prepared to go in and 0-4 drop. I had no idea what the experience of playing in a GP was going to be like. I didn't know what the side events were going to be like or how many of those I was going to do. I wound up getting to draft with a Hall of Famer. And I wound up getting to draft with a pro player, and I just generally had an amazing time. And we, do I want to talk about Butterface?
Pass.
Okay. getting to play Forbidden Desert was amazing. And there are no, if I had to pick four women to get buried in sand in the desert with, it would absolutely be the four of you.
Well, I died early, so I wouldn't know about the rest of you.
But mostly, I played a lot of Abzan. I played against a lot of Atarka Red, and I played a lot of green-white ramp which was really surprising. And every match that I won, the two matches that I won in two games. And every match that I lost, they had to go to three. And I also had to call slow play, which was an interesting moment. I don't blame my opponent for getting a little salty after that. But we were 1-1. And by the time we got to the third game, we had like 9 minutes, maybe 8.5 to play the third game. And he was like, well, I usually play commander. And I'm like, well, this is a standard GP. It goes faster. So I need you to move a little faster. And he wouldn't. And so I had to call a judge. And they had the same discussion that I think happened in the two-headed giant, which is, I need you to make a play. And it was an interesting moment because I didn't really think that that would happen. But overall, the remainder of my opponents were really fantastic. And even though I didn't get to play a woman, I was really impressed with the number of women that were at that event. It was really astounding.
I had a really good time at the GP as well. I did have two minor quibbles. The first thing that bothered me when I walked in the door was I discovered that it was cash only. And I don't necessarily have a problem with this, but I do have a problem when the TOs don't announce it. If you're going to put it on your website, put it on the Facebook, announce it on Twitter, you know, this is something that I think people like to plan for, especially if you're trying to budget for the event. I know there have been GPs where they've landed like right before payday. So I'm like, oh, well, I'll take my credit card and that's how I'll pay for things. And, you know, I don't have ATM capabilities on my credit card just for my own because the interest rate is so high on that sort of thing. So, you know, it's a good thing that I had gotten paid before I left, because if I had just showed up with my Discover card and planned on YOLOing it, I would have been completely out of luck. So I did give them that feedback where it's like, listen, if you guys are going to do this, you need to let people know, because showing up and then being told you got to go to an ATM, ATM fees are no fun, especially when you don't know how much money you're going to need for the weekend. And so I really wish that they would announce that a little better. The other thing I found kind of annoying were the long white boxes they give you with the swag. So, like, for participating in the Modern Showdown and for participating in the main, I think for the Modern Showdown, we got bags. We got bags with, like, the mat and everything in it. But for the main event, they give you these big, long, white, like, 800-count boxes. And so you're having to lug that beast around all day. And I ended up losing my box just because I just didn't think about it. So I think I laid it down somewhere and then didn't pick it up again. And I also gave the judges that feedback where I think they should try and do what SCG does, where SCG has started handing out vouchers. So, like, instead of just giving you the playmat for participating in an open, they now give you a coupon. And when you're ready to pick up the playmat, you go and give them the coupon, and then you get the playmat. So that way you're not having to lug that thing around all day. So I hope that that's something they institute, because those boxes are really annoying.
Yeah, this was my second time playing in a GP where I was given a box. And I think they're a great way to distribute the product, but afterwards, when you have to actually lug it around, it's kind of cumbersome. So what I saw a lot of people doing and what I ended up doing was I took all the stuff out of the box and I put it in my bag and then I just threw the box away. And that's kind of a waste of, you know, it's not an expensive product, but it's still something that, you know, costs money and that I'm sure they had to get from a supplier. So I think I like, you know, the solution that you proposed also, Aaron.
Mm-hmm. And we could even meet in the middle. Like, you could still put everything in the box, but just give people the box when they're ready to go. And that way they're not having to waste the white box that they're given. Mm-hmm. But I had a really good time at the event. I played Esper Dragons. I started off really strong. I was 4-1 going into round 6. And I was super excited because I only had to go 6-3 to day 2. And then I proceeded to lose the next 3. Largely due to variance. I had to mulligan quite a bit. And then there were decks I wasn't expecting to face. I would say my most memorable interactions, the first one took place in the bathroom. I was talking to a female judge, Nicolette, who we love, and we were talking about Atarka Red, and I assumed that we were the only two women in the bathroom. And so we're talking about Atarka Red, which I was able to dodge all day on Saturday, and all of a sudden we hear this woman in another stall, and she yells, "And just when you're at 17, suddenly you're dead." And we look around, and then I go to look down, and I see feet, and I'm like, oh, we're not alone in the bathroom. But how cool is it that you can be having a conversation about magic in a bathroom, and there happens to be a woman in the bathroom with you who also plays and who can just jump in? It was this nice little moment of sisterhood where it's like, oh, we're here, we're representing, we're playing, this is awesome, because normally you're in the bathroom alone at a lot of events, so that was really cool. My first round opponent was playing goblins, and I know this because he showed me his entire deck. So I go to sit down and he's like, I guess organizing, for lack of a better term, and it's all face up. So it's like goblin pile driver, goblin heel cutter, goblin cheat. And I'm like, I could say something right now, but I had a really bad feeling that even if I said anything, it wasn't going to go well. Like, I'm kind of weighing, like, how this is going to go, like, in a very choose your own adventure way. And I was like, how many people are actually going to be cool when you tell them that? Like, I just had a feeling it wasn't going to go well. So I admit that I didn't say anything. I was just like, hey, you. And I'm just watching him, and he's not thinking anything of it. He's like, hey, how's it going? And I'm like, I'm lightning strike, lightning wilds. I'm great. I'm great. How are you? And he's just sort of shuffling, and I see, like, a canopy vista, and he's like, doing good. And there's no awareness or anything happening there. So that felt really good. I did have an odd experience with my one rally opponent, and I talked to you guys about this, which I probably should have called the judge on him. So I didn't have a lot of experience against rally. I think I played it one time since I started practicing for the GP a month ago. And we had already, game one, he beat me. We were really close to going to time, and he decides to play a Jace. So I hear him say Jace, and he puts the checkbox down instead of the, like, some people don't actually put the Planeswalker card in their deck. So he puts down the checkbox. I don't look at the checkbox because I didn't think to do anything like that. And so it's Jace. I let it happen. I'm not too worried about a Jace at this point. It's my turn. I don't do anything about the Jace. Pass to his turn. He sacrifices something, and he goes, Liliana trigger? And I said, wait, where's Liliana? And he goes, oh, that's the checkbox. And I said, but when you played it, you said Jace, and you didn't immediately put a card on top of the checkbox. So then he shows me the checkbox. He slides it over, and Liliana is, in fact, checked. But he said Jace. And so I was just like, and it was just one of those where you're so close to time anyways, and you have such a long shot of winning that you're just too tired to argue. So I'm looking at the clock. There's like a minute left. I'm fucked. Like, I see his graveyard. And I'm just like, whatever, girl. You can have your Liliana. And so he, of course, does his thing, and he wins. And he was kind of manic throughout the game anyways. Like, I had a really hard time following him and what he was doing. And then there were several – I had to ask him to slow down several times. And I did end up losing. And then when I came back and told you guys the story, you were like, not only should you have called a judge, but you still should tell a judge what happened. Because if he does this again, that way it's established that he has a record of doing this sort of thing. So I did end up going to the head judge and telling him what happened, and they ended up making him get a different checkbox card because apparently that one was kind of vague. But yeah, that was something that happened, and it kind of, I'll admit, I was very, I didn't tilt as in like I was angry at him, but it definitely shook me up to where every game I played after that, I was just not really playing at my full capacity. Like, I was tilted in a very non-violent way, you know, where you're just sort of, you're not on your game after that. So that kind of put me off. But I had a really good time. I got to meet a lot of cool people. There was a lot of work for me there. Like, I did an interview for Vice, which is coming out soon. I recorded a deck tech with the professor for Tulare Community College, which I think is going to turn out great. And I had a lot of fun. It was great to see you guys, meet a lot of listeners. And I got Reed to sign my tokens.
GP winner Reed Duke.
Yeah. GP winner Reed Duke. So excited. He won with Rally the Ancestors. Three copies of Rally in the top eight. And a young man playing Abzan with 64 cards. How about that? So what did you all think about this? I know I said that I didn't have a lot of experience playing Rally the Ancestors, but was that a matchup that you all faced? Were you surprised that it took it down?
It's a pretty swingy matchup in my experience. So I've been playing Abzan for about 2 months, and I've faced Rally a number of times. And it really comes down to, you know, there are specific cards on both sides that really determine how the matchup goes. Like, for example, if the Abzan player has an Anafenza in play and, you know, holds it back, doesn't attack with it, because I have learned from experience, if you attack with an Anafenza, they will triple block it and kill it and then go off. That's what happens. So if they have an Anafenza in play, and the Rally player cannot bounce or kill the Anafenza, they can't go off. They just can't. If the Abzan player does not have an Anafenza, and they have a really fast start and the Rally player doesn't do a whole lot, then the Abzan player usually wins. If the Rally player has all that disruption, Like, if they can, you know, collect a company into a Sidisi's faithful and bounce the Anafenza, that's a huge window for them to capitalize on. And I think, you know, I think I've seen a lot of games where, you know, the Abzan player will win game one because, you know, they have four Anafenzas in their deck. They'll pretty consistently have one in play. But then the Rally player brings in a lot of ways to deal with the Anafenza, whether that's Murderous Cut or, you know, some other, you know, discard or removal. And I think I've seen the Rally player take the match quite a bit. And I think that's, you know, that's pretty much what happened here.
Yeah, I was surprised to see people, you know, so Abzan plays in as Anafenza, and I was surprised by the number of people that were like, well, Anafenza's out, he better wrap this up. And it was just like, and just to see the ease at which Reed was able to deal with it, where Sidisi's faithful, Murderous Cut, he just acted like it was nothing. And I don't think Anafenza's like the be-all, end-all in that matchup.
I played it twice, and my deck can deal with Abzan and Atarka Red and most ramp decks pretty effectively, but I just get run over by it. There's even with Hallowed Moonlight in my deck, if I don't draw it, it's very difficult for me to get around 4-color Rally. I just can't.
Yeah, I was losing to it even without the Rally. Like, I don't think the one guy I played even got a Rally off. It was just all these little creatures, lots of value, just from sacrificing to Nantuko Husk, all of the drain and the gain. There's just so many ways that that deck can attack you that I was just overwhelmed. And I'd like to think that with a little bit more practice, maybe I could beat it or I could get better at the matchup. But for somebody who only played it once in a month, and that was my second time, I went into it with a very single mindset where I was like, I'll just wipe the board. No. Right. It didn't really go down like that. SCG Charlotte was this past weekend, and there were two memorable incidents that made huge waves on social media. The first one involved the use of Pithing Needle in the semifinals. There was a young man named Bradley Carpenter. He was playing up against his opponent, who was playing Goryeo's Vengeance, and he decided to play Pithing Needle and called Borborygmos. His opponent was able to go off because the card is called Borborygmos Enraged, which means Pithing Needle didn't stop it, and there were a lot of people who felt that this was scummy behavior, that this shouldn't have been allowed to happen, and that the Pithing Needle should have still worked. Katie, as our resident judge, what do you think about this?
Well, so technically the ruling was right, how policy is written, but I was still upset. I felt like this was super unfair, and I'm kind of on the side of, like, I don't think policy should allow for loopholes like this, where the intent was pretty clear to everybody, you know, what he was trying to say, and, you know, it wasn't something where it was like, oh, well, he also has a Borborygmos in his deck, and Borborygmos Enraged. Like, it was not anything like that, and obviously, I mean, I don't know, I was pretty upset. I read all the Twitter conversations. Toby seems to be of the mindset that you shouldn't make policy based on corner cases, which I agree with, but I also think that for something this cut and dry, you shouldn't have policy that just kind of fucks the players over either. So I disagreed with how it went down, but the ruling was right, and I don't, you know, blame the judge or anything for that. So, you know, hopefully, I mean, I'm not sure if something will change. Toby really didn't seem of the mindset where he thought anything needed to be changed, so I'm not sure we'll see anything come of it, but I thought it was unfair in the end.
I actually agree with it.
Really?
So I had somebody at States lose because he named the wrong card against me. He was playing against me. I was on Ad Nauseam. He played a Pithing Needle, and he didn't know what, like, he, a lot of people don't know what Ad Nauseam does, which is completely fair, but instead of calling Lightning Storm, he named Lightning Cloud. So, like, he didn't remember the name of the card, so he placed a Pithing Needle, and he's like, lightning, and he's trying to, like, recall the art in his head. He's like, there were clouds and people and a bolt, and he goes, cloud? And I just kind of had a poker face on, and then when it was my turn to go off, I said, lightning storm, hold priority, and he was like, oh, lightning storm, that's what it was, and so he lost. And, you know, I remember that you guys recently changed your policy in terms of deck lists, where, like, didn't people used to be able to get away with abbreviating names on deck lists, and now they make you, like, spell them out?
It depends. I actually went back and read the policy. It's like, if it's the only, for planeswalkers, if it's the only walker that's in the format, so standard, we only have one Jace, right? But in, like, Legacy, there's, like, all the different Jaces. So if you're playing Standard and you write Jace, that's acceptable as an abbreviation. But if you're in Legacy and you say Jace on your deck list, that's, like, not acceptable because it could be a lot of different Jaces.
But what if it was a card? So I guess the question I have is, so, like, let's say... But there are cards with Jace in the name. So, like, if I were to go to GP Oakland and I just have Jace on my deck list... That's okay? Like, what if I'm talking about Jace's ingenuity? What if I'm talking about, like, that's okay?
Technically. Let me pull it up here on my little app.
Sure. Because I guess that's the only thing I'm concerned about, where it's like, you know, I remember that they were cracking down on that because people were abbreviating and just sort of, and then defending it with the you know what I mean kind of response, and the judges were like, but we don't know what you mean. And I know I've been very clear about that as well. And the other thing I found really interesting was in the original Reddit post, they said, he knows what's in Bob's deck list. So if you have a deck list in front of you, you should know that it's Borborygmos Enraged, and so you shouldn't have just said Borborygmos. I think if you're looking at the deck list, it tells you. Like, I could understand if you didn't have a deck list. I might be a little more lenient, but you're looking at the deck. I don't see how there was any reason that could have been missed, and maybe I'm just a terrible person, but I see absolutely nothing wrong with this.
He might not have known it was a big deal.
That's also true. And he might not have known that there's a card named Borborygmos, like, by itself. But I feel like... And then there was a lot of controversy over, like, if he said, your Borborygmos, because that somehow changed the definition because he was describing it further. And just, like, I don't know. All of that kind of wordplay seems like BS, but the deck list thing that we were just talking about says, it's a problem if a card listed on a deck list is not identified by its full name and could be interpreted as more than one card. Truncated names of storyline characters, legendary permanents, and planeswalkers are acceptable as long as they are the only representation of that character in the format and are treated as referring to that card, even if other cards begin with the same name.
And that I agree with, but like I said, what about cards like Liliana's Caress, where it's like, you know, you have a card that, or Chandra's Ignition, you know, you have a card like that where, you know, I would be concerned if somebody just says Chandra, because there are several cards with Chandra in it where you don't know what they're referring to.
Yeah, I think it's more of an issue if you do a deck check and you're like, they have a Chandra Planeswalker and also other cards named Chandra and how they're exactly listing those. But I think it's become so accepted that when you say Jace, like, I'm playing a Jace, nobody's like, oh, are you playing Jace's Ingenuity? It's like, no, I'm playing the $80 Planeswalker. So
65.
Ooh, I might have to make my move.
So do the rest of you agree with this, or do you disagree?
I agree with Katie.
Yeah, I do as well. I think it was obviously the correct ruling because of the way the policy is lined out, but I'm not sure if the policy itself is necessarily best for the players.
And I sort of sit in between wondering, why is there not an opportunity for the opponent to ask for clarification?
But it also, if I'm the opponent, why would I? Like, if I see that you're, like, when I saw my opponent was fumbling, where he was like, well, there were clouds and there was a card and it was from an ice age, I'm not going to help you because that hurts me. So
if they accurately describe it, it's actually like, well, so if they describe it to a judge and they're like, what is this card that does X and X? And then the judge can tell them the name of the card if they can't remember it. But if they describe it to you and then just say a completely different name, that's like a different case. You know, if he's like, I think it, you know, it does this and I know Lightning Cloud. Like, Lightning Cloud is obviously his answer. But if they can't remember and they just describe it, that's acceptable. So it seems kind of unfair if he's like Borborygmos and he knows, I mean, assuming he knows in his head what it's doing and what the deck is doing and whatnot, it seems kind of unfair to be like, no, you didn't know what the card was.
Okay, so wait a minute. So you're saying that if my opponent, in my example, if the opponent had gone up to the judge and given them that charades-like description, the judge can give them the name and it's fine. But if the opponent does that to me, I don't have to accept that as the actual name of the card.
Yes.
Okay.
So you as the player who's waiting for an answer from this pithy needle, you can just sit there, and until he says the name of a card, he hasn't decided. But then once he's like, I'm going to say lightning cloud or whatever, that's like final answer locked in. Mm-hmm. So.
Now, to be fair, I've been on the other side of this as well. Like, I remember when I first started playing Dredge, we use a card called Cabal Therapy, which also requires you to name cards. And I remember there was one time I was playing against Burn, and I called Firestorm. and what I meant was Fire Blast. And so I ended up losing, and then he showed me his hand, and I was like, yeah, that one, that's the card I was trying to name. And he's like, you said Firestorm. And so I think that when using those cards, there is a certain level of difficulty or skill that goes into it. And I'm not saying that you shouldn't use those cards, but I do think that that sort of comes with the territory where I know that if I'm going to use Cabal Therapy, I need to know what to look for. Like, I need to know its force of will, terminus, you know, I need to know what the players are. And especially if I have a deck list in front of me, I just know that that's sort of par for the course. So.
And I didn't put Infinite Obliteration into my deck, which would have been really great for my deck simply because of that. I felt like at the GP, it being my first event, I would be too nervous and I might not remember what card I was looking for. You know, so I was like, I don't know. Do I want to be tracking card names? Because for me, it was, I side on this being a fair call because I really felt like I worked very hard to get to the level where I was going to be comfortable playing at a GP. And that meant being knowledgeable even about my opponent's deck if I needed to make that call. And I wasn't comfortable with that at this point. So I left Infinite Obliteration out because I didn't want to have to name cards.
I've done that before too. Like I've erred on the side of caution when everybody's using a card and I don't know what the card does. I just don't use it because I remember when I first came back to Standard, you know, everybody was using Hangerback Walker and I was playing Green Red Ramp and I admit I didn't know how to use it. And so people were like, why aren't you using it? And I was like, because I don't know how to. I've never used End Protector before. I wasn't playing Standard when it first came out and when Death Mist and that were all the rage. So there have been quite a few cards that I haven't used just because I don't know how. And having to learn at a GP is not the where you want to be. Jeff Hoagland received a game loss in the top 8 for having marked sleeves. Went on a Twitter rant saying, never fucking use Legion supplies. True story, bless his heart, says he got 0 warnings and that they were right to give him a game loss. Judge Katie, what do you think about this?
Oh, he ended up saying that they were right?
It says 0 warning. The tweet says 0 warnings, comma, right to game loss. Oh, so that implies they went directly to game loss. Oh, I'm okay. Sorry.
So this is kind of, it's not like a tricky situation, but so say he was using the same sleeves throughout like the whole day or something, and then he gets a new one out of that same pack or something, and he puts it on 2 of his Jaces, or I don't even know what deck he was playing, Kiki Cord, so not Jace, but puts it on his Kikis or something. Those now look marked to the point where it's a pattern issue. We had the same thing come up at a PPTQ one time where a guy was playing with all black sleeves and his friend let him borrow 4 of a planeswalker and they were already in black sleeves of the same brand. And so he put them in. And when you're going through the deck, like you can see that the blacks are different shades of black. And so it was like, well, you know, technically you can see a pattern. And so, you know, if it happens to be all the lands look just slightly different or whatever it is, whether you're intending to or not, if a pattern is noticeable, it is upgraded to a game loss.
Okay. So when you say pattern, it doesn't mean that the player has done this repeatedly over different events. It just means there's a pattern in terms of what cards had this issue.
Yes, in the deck. And this can be, like, a bunch of different things. I mean, sometimes people get warnings for marked cards because they have foils in their deck. And it's like, if I have 4, what are they called? Dual deck foils. You know how their foiling is just a little different and the card is, like, kind of bent? Sometimes you can pick those out in certain decks. And so that would be a marked card, even if they're not all the same card. If you have multiple dual deck foils, that can be a problem sometimes. So it just depends on, you know, if there's any kind of pattern that's distinguishable, then that's an issue.
Interesting. Yeah, that was so strange to me because there have been a couple times in the past where I've had a deck check done and they've come back and they've been like, hey, girl, you've got a couple sleeves that are a little dinged. Do you have any extra sleeves with you? And usually I'll carry like 5 or 10 extra just in case. And I was like, yeah, I do. And they said, just swap them out and you'll be fine. I've never had it go straight to a game loss before.
Yeah, and that does happen really often, that there's dings in sleeves just from shuffling and whatnot. And if it's like you got a land and like a 1/1 and a 5/5 and they just happen to have dings, like that's not really a pattern, you know. But if it's all of your great planeswalker or your winning combo card, then that's kind of a different issue.
So you don't think this is anything that could be like overturned or anything like that?
I mean, I think that if you ever feel like you're getting an unfair ruling, you might as well talk to the head judge and they can explain this kind of thing to you, just because it leaves you with, like, at least you feel like you talked it out with someone. But I mean, if they, from what I could tell, it seemed like the judge gave the ruling, they talked to the head judge agreed with the ruling. It was probably a pretty cut and dry situation.
While we were in Oakland, the entire Oath of the Gatewatch set was leaked on the mothership. We now know every card that's going to be in it. Hallie, why don't you kick us off? What are you excited about from this set?
I'm most excited about the cycle of uncommon gold cards. Those look really awesome. Some of them look awesome for limited, some for constructed. I'm really excited about Reflector Mage, which is the 2/3 for one white blue. When it enters the battlefield, return target creature an opponent controls to its owner's hand. That creature's owner can't cast spells with the same name as that creature until end of turn. I think I may have discussed this on a previous show, but this card is pretty awesome. You know, it bears repeating. These cards are great and limited.
Do it one more time for the folks in the back.
Another card in this cycle that I'm really excited about is Storm Chaser Mage, which is a 1/3 for blue-red. It's also a human wizard. Human wizard is like my favorite creature type. I just love human wizards. You got your snapcasters, your delvers, like just all the best creatures. Anyway, so this is a 1/3 with flying, haste, and prowess. And I'm definitely looking forward to putting this in my cube. I know for cube builders, it's sometimes hard to find really good is-it cards for your cube, or at least as many good is-it cards as, say, like Rakdos cards or Azorius cards or Selesnya cards. Like, there aren't a whole lot of cards on, like, a high power level, and I think blue-red is kind of a hard pair to, you know, figure out and give a theme in limited. But Prowess is a really great ability for limited and, you know, for constructed too. I mean, there's that Mardu Prowess deck running around. So I'm really excited about this card. Definitely putting it in my cube, and I'm excited to see what potential it has in, you know, modern and potentially even legacy.
I'm excited about elves. I know I've said it before, but I just want to play all of the elves. I really think that my bug elves deck that I've been working on, I think I'm going to make it Jund elves. So I can have some like kill spells in there and some other stuff. And I want to play with Mina and Den Wildborn. That's the legendary elf ally that you can play an additional land on each of your turns. And then if you pay a red and a green, you can return a land you control to its owner's hand and target creature gains trample until end of turn. And I think that is amazing. And I would really like to play with that. I'm also interested in a red spell. I know it sounds bad of me. But yes. But Brute Strength looks really, really, really cool. And I think that in the place of, you know, a lot of red spells that we are missing that could do damage, I think that it's a good replacement to, it's a colorless and a red, and it's an instant that gives a target creature +3/+1, and it gains trample until end of turn. So it's like, huh, now your little goblins have trample and you're +3/+1. So I just think that's kind of cool. But there's quite a few cards. I was like making a list. I'm like, wow, there's like 20 cards in here now. So basically I just want to kind of ball out with the new Nissa. And Oath of Nissa looks pretty awesome. And that's the one where it's a green, it's a legendary enchantment. And when it enters the battlefield, you look at the top three cards of your library. And you can reveal a creature, land, or planeswalker card from among them and put it into your hand. Put the rest on the bottom of your library in any order, and you may spend mana as though it were mana of any color to cast planeswalker spells. Love it.
People are calling that the Green Ponder.
I like it.
As a new player, I'm really excited to see this storyline sort of close out. This is the first time that I've watched all three sections of a set be released. So I'm really happy with the way that Wizards is really telling a story with the cards. I'm hoping that green gets fun again. I mean, I'm not really sure. And then for mechanics, I'm really curious to see not just how the colorless mana works out for the set, but also how it retroactively interplays as, you know, modern as a whole. So that'll be really interesting. But can we talk about the card names? Because they're kind of awesome.
Which ones?
My new boyfriend, Kalidas Trader of Get, or Get in My Deck, is really so he's 2/2 black. He's a legendary creature, vampire warrior, and I kind of heart him. You know, he's a 3/4. You know, if a non-token creature an opponent controls would die, exile it and put a 2/2 black zombie creature token onto the battlefield. That sounds kind of great. He's got lifelink. And then if you pay 2 and a black, you can sacrifice another vampire or zombie and put 2/+1/+1 counters on Kalidas himself. And while there is an Eagles joke in this, I think that might I might be showing my age if I make it. But, I mean, Aaron, you're a big fan of Munda's Vanguard, and I can see why. But,
oh, God. You know, I still can't say that without
Munda.
Munda. I can't do it. I know. I'm so bad.
I mean, Dread Defiler, Maw of Kozilek, Corpse Churn. There's really nothing to not like about these card names.
What, Hedron Alignment doesn't get any love?
I'm actually excited about several cards. The first one I'm excited about is Immolating Glare, also known as the White Doomblade. I'm super excited about that because having to wait to, you know, play something like Silk Wrap, you know, as a control deck, you definitely want as many things be instant speed as possible. And so I'm really looking forward to using that card. Dazzling Reflection looks kind of fun against red decks. It costs 1 and a white. It's an instant. You gain life equal to target creature's power. And then the next time that creature would deal damage, you prevent it. So like you wait for a Tarker to be like, team or battle rage, become immense. 8/8 blah. And you're like, well, I'm going to gain 8, and then that's going to do nothing. Like, I just can't wait to put that on somebody. I think that's going to be a lot of fun. Ruin in Their Wake is the 2-mana ramp spell that I have been waiting for. I do think that we're going to have to change the mana base of Green-Red Ramp a little bit to accommodate that, because right now we're leaning really hard on Sanctum of Ugin. But, I mean, a 2-mana ramp spell is hot. Being able to do Explosive Vegetation on 3 is the dream. So I was really, really excited about that card. I think Warping Whale is also going to have a place in Green-Red Ramp. I think that's going to be an auto-include to some degree. I think Mina and Den is going to be really good there. And the last card that I'm excited about, purely for silly purposes, is Call the Gatewatch. Now, I don't actually care about Call the Gatewatch, like what it actually does, but when I see the card, I immediately think of that Robin song, Call Your Girlfriend. And so when I see the card, I want to do Call the Gatewatch, and like, I'm the only one who knows that song, I'm guessing.
No, I know it.
Yeah, I know it.
Thank you. So if you're going to play... So anybody who's listening, if you play this card at the pre-release, you have to promise me that when you play it, you're going to sing it just like that. Call the Gate Watch.
Can hear your little snaps in the background.
Doing the white girl dance. It's fine. But yeah, I really, really like that card. So I can't wait to use it in the pre-release. Daily MTG made an announcement on Monday that they were going to be diversifying their roster of authors. The girls from Magic the Amateur are going to be regular contributors. Gabby Spartz, Melissa DeTora, Corbin Hostler from our friends over at Brainstorm Brewery, Kenji Igashira, who we love, and a young man named Quinn Murphy, who happens to be an African-American game designer. We have several mutual friends on Twitter, and he seems really lovely as well. I'm really excited to see some new, fresh, and diverse faces on the mothership.
I am too. Yeah. There's so many talented people in the community, and you know, just having more and more people involved in Daily MTG just seems like the best way to go.
Mm-hmm. I also like that they're going to be making more of an effort to highlight other people in the community.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that really bothered me when I first joined the Magic community from playing World of Warcraft is that we didn't have a hub to like highlight contributors or even smaller contributors. We used to have a site called WoW Insider, which had regular columns that were all about highlighting blogs and podcasters and things like that, and just sort of spreading the word. And it was really strange to me to not see that in Magic, where there was this, it kind of felt like there were these islands and they weren't really working together. So, like, the biggest island was obviously the mothership, but then there was, like, the big island of Star City, the big island of Channel Fireball, the big island of TCG Player, and nothing really for, like, the littler islands or the littler land shapes. And so it's really nice to see the mothership making an attempt to sort of bridge these islands, to not have, you know, these major content sites and nothing in between. So it seems like every day they're linking to tweets and decks and columns and podcasts, and I'd like to think that maybe we'll see our show on there one day.
Something I really liked about the new setup, too, is that they're releasing, instead of doing one massive data release every day, they're going to intersperse new information and new articles throughout the day. So people like me, who I don't sit in front of a computer all day. And so for me to go and sit down, I might miss new information, or I might be way behind the curve on Twitter, or I'll find things out on Twitter instead of actually from the source, because that's, everybody's already talking about it. So getting stuff released throughout the day and really understanding that people consume information differently now, I really like that that's informing how they're making these changes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. For our closing segment, I figured it would be fun if we play a little game called Make Our Own Oath. So the oaths are popular. I guess you're going to be riding out this Gatewatch theme for a while. The concept of the Gatewatch sort of like being this Avenger type group. And each of the four planeswalkers have come up with their own oaths. And I thought it would be fun if we were to take part in the Gatewatch, if we were to be part of this group, what would our oath be? So Amy, why don't you kick us off? If you were to, if you were to pledge the Gatewatch, what would your oath be?
Put on the spot.
That's how this works, boo.
So, I sort of came ready-made with an oath that I live by, which is, I live by the law, and my oath is always to live by the law of fuck yes or no. And that is, I either am going to do something with everything that I have and really put myself into it, or I'm not going to do it. And and I apply that to everything in my life, and, you know, from men to what I'm going to eat for dinner, or, you know, what I'm going to do that weekend, or do I want to see that movie? And it serves me well. It means that I don't spend a lot of time doing things that are sort of middling, or, you know, I'm halfway into it. It's a big reason why after 6 or 7 months of play that I played the main event in a GP, and I had a great time. So that's it. That's my oath. Fuck yes. Or no.
Noble. Very noble.
It's very definite.
Very definite. Yeah, that's true. So, Katie, what's yours?
So I kind of went back and forth, but, you know, I noticed all of these oaths, except Chandra's, are like, for the blah, 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 I will blah. And so I guess for mine, I would do a, for the sake of Netflix and Watson, I guess I could help out if needed.
I figured yours would be kind of like Nyssa, where, like, you know, for the sake of the Aminals, I will keep watching.
I totally thought of that. Like, I was like, but that's like just like Nyssa, and I'm Katie the Plague Neal. So,
because you're the one who got us all sick.
I really am. But
come stay on my houseboat free of charge. My mom will make you tacos. We'll give you rides. Blah.
Have the sickness.
Yeah. But no, I could see you doing like an Oath of Nyssa thing, like for the puppies and the bears and the kitties and the moose.
And the hedgehogs with fuzz in their teeth.
And the hedgehogs with fuzz in their teeth.
Yes. Yeah. Well, a combination of all of those things into one, you know, sizable quotation.
Okay. Hallie, what's yours?
So I also was trying to, you know, see what kind of fit the formula. I was looking at all the flavor text on the oath cards, and I really enjoyed Chandra's. I really love how spunky she is. So, you know, her oath is, if it means that people can live in freedom, yeah, I'll keep watch. So I thought, you know, if I were asked to take an oath, I would probably have a snarky response to, like, sure, I'll keep watch. Call me when my shift starts. Like, but, in all seriousness though, to sort of, you know, go along with what Amy was saying, you know, if I have any, you know, rules to live by or something to offer up, I would say, do what you love, even if it scares you.
Chris, for the love of the playmat, you will keep watch.
I guess that could be my official stance. I guess the only thing that I kept thinking about when I was noodling on this was, for all living things, I would keep watch. I mean, even for the Eldrazi. I mean, they're just doing what Eldrazi do, right? I mean...
They're just hungry, that's
yeah,
all.
Yeah, they're like Galactus. He hungers, he needs to eat.
They must just have, like, raging tapeworms.
It could be.
They're just always hungry. Like, they never get satisfied.
That's going to be the name of my metal band, Raging Tapeworms.
And probably the name of this episode. So, I came up with an oath, and I think I'm the only one who, like, followed the script. I'm the good girl here. So my oath, I decided that for the sake of graveyards everywhere, I will keep watch, because I am a firm believer that graveyard decks should be are healthy for a format. They should be allowed, and anything I can do to make sure that people can play with strategies that allow them to use and abuse their graveyards, because that means a lot to me.
Wow, that was so like what we were supposed to do.
Yeah. Write that down. Yeah. But no, I was just thinking about it, and I was like, what's one thing I'm really passionate about? And I was like, I love graveyard decks. And, you know, I've always been very, you know, annoyed by the fact that it seems like Wizards is kind of moving away from that, where it's like, you know, even though we do have Rally, like, what else is there? And it's like, it does feel like, you know, I have felt like through the years, like they, you know, like they've made an attempt to kind of move away from like one mana ramp spells and from mana dorks and things like that. And, you know, we really don't see land destruction anymore. And there's just certain things we don't really see. And I do feel like they're kind of slowly moving away from like graveyard decks. And that's something I really love. And, any opportunity that I have to play with a graveyard, I think I take advantage of, and I always encourage other people to do so as well. And so, you know, I exist to protect the graveyards and graveyard strategies. But not Snapcaster, because the card's fucking busted. But
no!
Card's fucking sweet.
Man.
Card is bullshit.
Snapcaster just wants to live, too.
Yeah.
And he just wants to bring back some cool spells with them as well.
That's all he wants to do in life.
I mean, I like the Jace. I like Jace's way of Snapcasting. Like, I like that. It just feels a bit more, like you have to work for it more. I just see people kind of resting on Snapcaster, and it makes me so sad, where it's like, you know, Kolaghan, Snapcaster, Kolaghan, Snapcaster. Wake me up when you're done.
He's like a life raft in the middle of the modern ocean of craziness. Mm-hmm. It's great.
Snapcaster can have raging tapeworms.
Poor guy.
So Andrew and Courtney were out for the GP, and they stayed with me, and the last day of the GP, we drafted Innistrad. And at this point, I don't ever want to draft anything other than Innistrad ever again, because it was so much fun. And right? Andrew pulled a Snapcaster, and the other woman, Michelle, pulled a Liliana of the Veil, like, first pick. Like,
what?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, it was kind of awesome. I've never seen her squeal so loud ever. It's kind of amazing. That's and awesome. Andrew did the same thing. So
I want to see Andrew squealing.
Andrew squealing?
Andrew squealing. Oh my god.
I want to see I want to see a grown man squeal over a draft pick.
Well, I should have recorded it.
Yeah, you should. So what is everybody's pre-release plans? Hallie, are you still going for the Rocky Grind 4 or 5?
Oh yeah, going for 4. I'm going to GP Vancouver soon, so I need all the practice I can get.
Ooh. Katie, Chris, what are your plans?
I'm doing a two-headed giant on Sunday. I have to work on Saturday, and I thought about squeezing in the like our midnight on Friday, and I work at 10 a.m., so if I get home at like 4:30, then I could get in like 3.5 hours of sleep. But with the sickness, I'm just weighing if I should be like a responsible adult or if I should have fun in life and suffer later. So we'll see if I end up playing the midnight or not.
Do it. I'm going to do it. I'm going to do midnight, and then I'm going to do Saturday two-headed giant with my friend Ben.
I have to pass. I can't go. I have several family obligations this weekend, so I have to wait for release weekend.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to play in the pre-releases either. I haven't enjoyed the last couple, and I'm still kind of burned out from the GP. Like, I tried playing a couple of games on Modo, and I was just really tilty and not having a good time. So I think I need to take a week or two off just from Magic in general and sort of, you know, kind of build up my reserves a little bit. I have to get ready for SCG Regionals in a couple, less than a month away. And I also saw that Reed Duke, before he picked Rally for the GP, was playing with Majoring Esper again. And so I was like, oh, based on Majoring Esper. So I saw the list, and so I may throw that together and like go to our standard FNM is really, really casual. So I think I may go to that where there's no real stakes involved and just sort of play with Bay's list a little bit and see what that's like. But I'm not really looking to do anything else over the weekend. I'm still sick myself, so I think I want to sleep and clean my house because my apartment's fallen apart since I've been sick. Like I'm the biggest baby when I'm sick, and I'm just kind of like, mommy, hold me. And my mom's like, when my mom was alive, she's like, you have a 401k. Why are you doing this? And so I have to take care of myself, which is always a bummer. If anybody's enjoyed listening to the show, how can they find you all and how can they get a hold of you?
So I'm Hallie. You can find me on Twitter at HalCanSan. That's HalCanSan. You can find me on Twitch at twitch.tv/HalCanSan. I will be streaming this Friday night. Legacy Cube is coming back on Magic Online, and the Legacy Cube is one of my favorite things on Magic Online, so I'm very excited to draft it. Might even do the Maria Bertholdi special and hoof some people. That could be fun. And as always, you can find my writing here on Gathering Magic.
And I'm Katie. You can find me on Twitter at meanmugger, that's MEANMUGGER, or you can find me by email at katie.neil14@gmail.com.
I'm sorry, I'm laughing. I just got Katie's pick.
What is it?
She's mean mugging me. And I'm Chris. My Twitter is at TEHKRIZ. My Gmail is YOTEHKRIZ@gmail.com. And my Snapchat is Cryptic Command, spelled with K's. I'm loving all the stuff I'm getting from you guys, so keep it coming.
Oh, should I go?
Amy?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
No, we don't want anyone to know who you are.
So I'm Amy. You can find me on Twitter at AJ Bailey, or you can find my podcast at Planeswalker Guide, which is spelled PLNS Walker Guide. And you can find all of the episodes on Stitcher and iTunes. And if you go to planeswalkerguide.com, you can find all kinds of additional content, including Baby's First Deck List and all kinds of other content that we've put up there over the last 6 to 7 months. So hopefully we'll get to see some of you guys over on that show as well.
And I'm Erin. You can find me on Twitter at OriginalEstrus. That is OriginalEstrus. You can email me at estrus@elitistjerks.com. You can find the show on GatheringMagic.com, iTunes, and Stitcher Radio. And you can support us at our Patreon at patreon.com/thegirlfriendbracket. Thank you all so much for listening, and please take care of yourselves, okay? Bye-bye.